Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop. With the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me. I know it's crazy, but it's true. It's not worth eating if it lacks the greasy. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you burst into the kitchen, you grab a fist of meatballs and a bone for wishing. With the bacon and the lamb chops and the scrapple and the ham hock, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me. Spend some time. Spend some time with me.
Ha! I'm Mr. Cutlets, Josh Ozersky, City Search National Restaurant Editor, and this is the Mr. Cutlets Show on Heritage Network Radio. We're here at Roberta's, everyone's famous favorite Italian. Really, it does it a disservice to call it an Italian restaurant or a pizzeria or whatever. It's sui generis. This is a very special place. I think we should talk about it in the third segment. I address this to the man on my right, but I got two other people here too. And they are all have a contribution to make. We have our lovely co-host, ace reporter Stephanie Cohen.
Hello, everyone.
Stephanie's a newspaper reporter, though we can't say for whom.
But we can stop saying that.
We have Jerry Rosengarten here, who is a significant figure in the cultural history of New York, also owns a hamburger restaurant.
Thank you, Josh.
And we have my friend and peer, Ben Leventhal, the founder, editor for many years of Eater.com.
Hello, Josh.
And we're all going to talk about the restaurant world and what's going on in it. But before we do that, I'd like to pick up where we left off in the last show.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
Who wrote that song? That song's been in my head for
two weeks.
Can I just say how rare it is that you get to listen to that song all the way through?
It's such a good song.
Well, believe me, like, I'll always grant you the privilege of listening to my
Should eventually do a segment on how, on the Mr. Cutlets website, there was once.
There was a Mr. Cutlets
now website. A fallen digital hero,
well,
I guess.
Well, he may yet be resurrected. We'll see. But you know, that song was written by a genius named Don Ralph, who has a band called Life in a Blender. You can find him on iTunes or whatever. And they are so good. He's a weird guy. He looks like Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick. But he wrote
Life
that song.
Life in a Blender?
Life in a Blender, it's called. They've been playing for 20 years, but no one picked them up.
He performs with a pantyhose.
You know, he has a puppet.
Head.
No, he's something.
Sometimes.
They have a certain Dada aspect to them. But anyway, you guys were talking. Does that answer your question, Stephanie?
Yeah, I like the song. It's professional.
Oh, no, they had a horn section.
Yeah.
You know, at the end, too, he says, spend some time with meat.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
People don't catch all the time.
Yeah.
Spend some time with meat.
Real nuance.
That's a new song, boy. I got
bacon and the ham box.
I'd like to hear a couple. You know, you should commission some remixes.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But that would, you know, I don't know.
He's not the remix type.
Put those mixes in a blender.
He's
go
a
ahead.
Classic.
I'd like to see Jay-Z get his hands on that.
Well, he won't if my lawyers have anything to say. Speaking of lawyers, interestingly, over the break,
nice intro, Josh.
That's cool.
Jerry mentioned that he felt that he had gotten a real zots out of Curbed, your partner Lockhart Steele's real estate website.
Yes.
Over something to do with the Bowery Hotel. Now, even though it's not exactly food related, I consider Jerry to be what the FBI calls a person of interest.
Yes, that's good. Thanks a lot.
And I think I would like to
that's
hear...
That's why I've always stayed in the background, if you will.
A little inside dope. What did they say and why?
They didn't like the way it was designed in the neighborhood. They didn't want re-gentrification of the Bowery. And they basically kept putting us on the cover, or at least in the first page of their blog. And I took the heat. I'd never heard of Curbed before. Now I knew him
what
intimately.
What is this damn curve?
Yeah, see? The Zola of the blogosphere.
And it seemed like they were speaking for everybody, which is a problem for me as a single developer, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think they're unhappy now.
Well, what ended up happening? Did you have to? I mean, it did get developed, right? I mean, that
hotel there were rumors that we overbuilt the site, that we were having problems with this, problems with that. They didn't like the look of it. We modified the look when we decided to make it a hotel. It didn't start out that way, and it was it's been, knock wood, a very successful project. As a matter of fact, it's one of the best hotels in the world, according to what is that, Leisure Magazine or something that.
Leisure Suit Magazine.
No, not Leisure Suit. Please. Would you drop
Jerry,
this?
Of course, invented
could you
the
drop
leisure
this
suit.
Leisure Suit?
And he did, actually.
You're not supposed,
Travel a
you're
Leisure
not
Suit
supposed
Magazine.
To jump in all the time. Please. Yeah.
I am.
Oh, are you?
It is a beautiful hotel.
Yeah, it is a great
hotel.
It is.
It's so cool. It did start that. I feel like that design that...
Well, that was Evroco and all those guys.
Yeah.
It was in the air.
It was basically, Eric and Sean designed, and we had a lot of different conversations about what it was going to be, and they designed.
What would you call it? It's like Moorish hunting lodge.
No, it's like in the 20s, going back to
in what
the,
country?
In here, New York.
Like the Overlook Hotel in The Shining. That's the idea of that hotel.
No.
You know, the great thing about that hotel as it relates to the neighborhood is that it's actually a great place. If you live in the neighborhood, it's kind of a great place to hang out. Gemma's
a restaurant. Right?
Gemma is it's a great place to settle in for anything from a coffee to a pizza to a drink at the bar, and even the lobby. I mean, I go to the lobby.
He's making up for Curb now, right now.
I know. You know, no bullshit. I go to the lobby a fair amount, and just
we've gone to the lobby
meetings
on
there or whatever
again.
Else. But it's definitely like a modern New York hotel, and that it's as much for the neighborhood as it is, I think, as for tourists.
It doesn't have sharp edges. It's the way it was done then, with real stuff. Not just sheetrock that make corners.
I find this very interesting, and yet I feel that we're doing our listeners a disservice by not talking about foods, really, which is this is why they're here.
Okay.
So...
I have a vested interest there, too.
Yes. Well, Jerry is we like Jerry, aside from the fact that he has general menschy qualities, he is a true entrepreneur in the old spirit. So he did that. He created the Leisure Suit, as Stephanie is fond of saying, and that you can look it up. And
I think you should embrace it, Jerry.
He totally embraces it.
Is there anything I can do now? It's my claim to fame.
Well, you invented legal lofts in New York.
But there's nobody who wants to know that.
And then the other thing is you have this thing now is you have Stand, obviously, as your hamburger restaurant, mm-hmm. which I think is one of the best hamburgers. And I sent Platt there and all my hamburger friends. And you have this new thing. What is this I'm looking at? It's an iPhone, got a thing on it.
I'm going to go real quick. I love Apple. I've had Apple right from the first machine, and I have one of them on my desk, the first one in my office. Apple came out with the iPhone. The iPhone was great. Everybody complained that it was a flat screen. They couldn't feel the keys. Steve Jobs said, they'll like it better. It's better. And he's right. But people can't get over the hump. So I designed keys that don't take away from the look of the iPhone, don't take away from the size of the screen, don't take away from the weight of it.
It's a transparent rubber insert that goes over
it's like Braille.
It's actually transparent PVC. And what it does, it basically gives you the location of where
it's
the keys
like
are.
It's like pushing a real keyboard.
But without losing the view.
But without losing the view because it's clear.
So the end result is that this
now
is
what is
very
it called, simple. Jerry?
It's called 4iThumbs.
So I take it that is an eccentric spelling in some way?
The number 4, iThumbs.
iThumbs, E-Y-I, well, iThumbs.
No, iThumbs, just
I like iPhone.
Oh, I see, like iPhone, iTunes.
iPhone, yeah, right.
Gotcha.
That's the concept. Let's go back to food. No,
okay. No, but can you Google that and find it on
you
the computer?
You can find it online now. We haven't actually come out with it. We will be coming out with it next month.
I also think Jerry should get more credit for his having what I think is the only good spiced hamburger possibly ever made.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you that you're a fan.
I'm surprised, as am I.
You don't
as
want anyone I. touching.
No, it's so. And I was so prepared to hate it, and I should hate it, and it's against everything that I believe in with hamburgers, and yet it happens.
Why does it work?
I thought that was your feeling on Bobby's as well. Isn't that what happened
with Bobby's?
I was with
Burger
you.
Palace?
I was with you. Not, I'm sorry to switch
You're talking about
subject,
the...
But when I was with you when you had Bobby's Burger Palace the first time.
Yes.
And that's really... I mean, he really mutilated the concept of a burger. There,
I feel that there's something that's... Yeah, I think that it, I see it as being morally delinquent on the part of a chef to take something of such surpassing purity... And stoop it with all kinds of weird.
Well, that's easy because I'm not a chef, so I can do whatever I want.
Well, I don't think that's it. It's just, you know, the things that are in it are aromatics that enhance flavor. Ben, you're not paying attention to me. You're looking out the window.
No, I'm listening.
I want to have the rap. That's why I want to, you know.
I'm watching.
I just know when you start talking.
I want to be like the last king of Scotland.
I just know when you get it on that kind of path that you're going to be espousing for a few minutes.
So yeah, so you could go off. It's true.
You can go to the John if you want.
We've all seen it. It's like playing American Pie or something. No, but I forgot what I was saying. No,
that was the intent.
The Standburger has got parsley and garlic in it. I guess there might be a little bit of onion, but the point is, none of those things are spices.
Still
per se.
Still hasn't hit it, but go ahead.
It's something like that, Jerry. And they're aromatics that enhance meat flavors rather than obscure them. So the things that I really object to is when they start loading in curries and chilies and, right. You know what I mean? Like things that are inorganic to
meat. Well, they're not natural with, in fact, a hamburger.
And you've got a nice, soft, puffy bun. Mm. You know, he puts a little olive oil on it, mm-hmm. grills it. It's a nice burger. Now, Ben... speaking of hamburgers, obviously, there's a lot going on in the hamburger business. Hamburgers is a big thing in New York. Maybe we should return to that. But what are your as an observer of the New York restaurant scene, few people have the amount of exposure you do. What would you say are the signal trends right now? What are the big stories right now in the New York restaurant business?
Well, you know, I think we're continuing to see smaller restaurants prevail. I think that... you know, there may be a restaurant like the Standard Grill is an exception, but, you know, smaller places, intimate places, very straightforward and you might call them honest places are still being very much embraced by New Yorkers. I think the era of your Budokans and the Morimoto's and the Del Posto's is, you know, it still seems something of a joke to New Yorkers. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's no returning hunger for anything like that. I think
no, but some of those restaurants do very well. That's the
sure,
thing.
But none of them are getting built anymore.
Well, and look at the murder job that Adam Platt laid into the new Oriole with.
Insane.
I mean, those guys put a lot of money into that project.
Right.
And he killed them as dead as Dillinger.
Well, I mean, I think that you have two forces there. I mean, one. You don't have a lot of people spending that kind of money and making that kind of gamble, and now you know, the ones that have and that do are really getting crushed for it, and the smaller players who have less money at the outset are more focused on little places.
I'm sorry, Steffi.
Which ones are you talking about?
You know, I'm even talking about a place like Minetta, which is not brand new anymore. But Minetta is a tiny restaurant. Nobody realizes. I mean, unless you've been there, Minetta is what, 50 seats?
Yeah.
I mean, that's for Keith McNally, who's probably one of the three most successful restaurateurs in the history of New York, for him to decide that a 50-seat restaurant is what plays speaks volumes about where we are right now, I think.
Well, why does it play? I mean...
If I may, the economics are crazy. They have been crazy. The amount of money that's been put into these big places, the amount of rents they're paying, I never could understand how they could come out. And you know, they have to have 100% home run for them to cover their nut and make some money.
Well, I want to talk about that a little bit, but we have to take a little break, thank our sponsors, and let's delve deeper into this on the Mr. Cutlets Show.
Way back up in the woods, I was so ragged that folks used to call me Patches. Papa used to tease me about it, of course, deep down inside he was hurt because he'd done all he could. My papa was a great old man. I can see him with a shovel in his hand. See, education he never had.
He did wonders when the times got bad. The little money from the crops he raised barely paid the bills we made. Oh, life had kicked him down to the ground. When he tried to get up, life would kick him back down. One day, Papa called me to his dying bed, put his hands on my shoulder, then in tears he said, Patches, I'm depending on you, son, to pull the family through. My son, it's all left up to you. 2 days later, Papa passed away. I became a man that day. So I told Mama I was gonna quit school, but she said that was Daddy's strictest rule. So every morning before I went to school, I fed the chickens
and I chopped wood too. Sometimes I fought. Ah, that's the greatness of Clarence Carter singing Patches, and this is the okayness of Josh Ozersky, the national restaurant editor for City Search, author of The Hamburger, A History. And this is our radio show on the Heritage Radio Network, broadcast from Roberta's. And Roberta's a significant restaurant, too. I mean, this is not, you know, I mean, if you were looking at a restaurant for this particular moment, you know, like,
this is the quintessential one.
I mean, in many ways, yeah, you could say that.
Certainly.
I mean, Jerry, you just got done saying before the break, these places with the huge $7 million build-out or the $10 million build-out have to be such home runs. I mean, they have to do, personally, I don't understand the...
I only believe that those are ego trips. Somebody is out of control.
But isn't that where the tourists go? I mean, look at Tavern on the Green. It's like the number one restaurant.
And Tao does so much money.
Yeah, but how many?
And Tao,
China Grill. But,
yeah,
but they're all vying for that same thing. Now they can be in Times Square.
There's a lot of tourists, you know, that come to Manhattan.
I said they can go to Times Square. Well, they go to other areas like that. But they go when the tourists aren't there in the winters. What happens to those restaurants with those type
tourists
of overheads?
Tourists are in New York in the winter.
I mean, the thing is, they have overheads. But I mean, like a restaurant that has got 200 seats.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how does it? What's the economics like? Do they have to turn all those tables, or does it?
I'm certainly not an expert on this, but what I will say is mostly anecdotally. What I have heard is, I mean, obviously this depends on neighborhood, and one of the reasons you open a restaurant in Brooklyn versus in Soho or versus in the West Village is because you can survive on a turn and a half a night. But you know, if we're talking about a prime New York neighborhood, you really have to do two full turns to break even.
Whatever,
you know,
the size of 50,
whatever the size is,
whatever
the equation is. I mean, you have to turn it over twice or three times. I think, you know, generally what I hear is that if you turn it over twice, you're breaking even. If you turn it over three times, you start to make a little money. And by turning it over three times, I mean, just let's put it in very practical terms. That means you're seating people at 6:30, right?
Right.
Or you're seating people at 11.
But on Wednesday.
But it means you're on a Wednesday. That's right. But it means you're not, you know, you don't survive if you can just seat somebody. So just seat the dining room at 8 o'clock.
Right.
And what I'm saying is, if that occurs, you got to be 100%. You're not talking about three seatings with 70%,
right,
60%. That's not three seatings.
That's got to be very difficult. I often wonder, like, you know, you have an interesting feature on Eater, one that I like and wish I had thought of, called Who Goes There?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all these restaurants that you think, like, well, can you name some of the recent ones? Like, restaurants that exist, someone must be going there, but, I mean, you can't imagine why or who.
Yeah, the restaurants like Fedora on West 4th, and actually Sevilla also on West 4th.
But those are like neighborhoods.
That's a good point.
Well, those are neighborhood people who live on that block.
Well, any of these places. I mean, Gino on Lexington was another one.
What about like Japanese? Who's going to Japan?
Well, that's a different category of who goes there.
All right.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing about the who goes there, and this goes back to the economics too, in most cases, those restaurants have survived because either the owner, the operator of the restaurant, owns the building, or it's a long-term lease that is at some point going to expire.
Or it's a family-operated setup where everyone is concerned and there. Not just absentee, but they're running the place.
In which case, they're just probably breaking even.
They're living.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, like, look at Tafara, you know. I mean, people go on like, oh, you know, he's making $5 for a slice of pizza. First of all, it's a privilege to pay for that pizza. But, you know, like, yeah, he's really getting rich, you know. That's why he's, like, making pizzas at 70. And the kids, who are, like, all 40, are, like, slicing pepperonis, you know, for him.
How much is the decor? How important is the decor to the food? I mean, to a restaurant.
This is an interesting question because it speaks to the how much you have to invest in designers and stuff. I mean, the Breslin, we were talking about it before, is extraordinarily beautiful restaurant.
Yeah, it is. It's gorgeous.
I mean, you know, that doesn't, you don't just get that from...
No, in fact, the designers of the Breslin, Roman and Williams, they also designed the Standard. And they're working on, you know, they're working on John McDonald's overhaul of Chinatown Brasserie. They're extremely high-end designers right now.
What, really? What's their names again?
Roman and Williams is the company.
It's a place you want to hang out.
Yeah, you just feel good being in there. And you walk in and it seems to have been there a million years, which is...
The only thing I would say is this. Whenever a restaurant closes, no matter how well it was designed, the next guy comes in and changes 100%.
It's true.
That's right.
Okay.
In fact, it's funny you should say that. I was chatting with Jeffrey Chodorow this week about, you know, Jeffrey Chodorow owns dozens and dozens of restaurants and, in fact, opens and closes lots of them with some frequency. So, you know, has spaces on long-term lease, and he turns over the concepts until he hits something that works. Mm-hmm. He has a rule that he never lets the same designer redesign a restaurant because you kind of need to. You need to change it. You need to do a real overhaul. You need to change the bones and sort of, you know, exercise it almost, you know, after it's closed.
Can I go on record here as saying that I have as little interest in the interior design of a restaurant as I do in its plumbing.
Remember the other night you were either going to take us to that Chinese place. What was it called?
Where?
On the Upper West Side.
Oh, or La Dynastia.
La Dynastia, which was fluorescent lit,
right?
You know, Chinese restaurant. Yeah. Or
Danielle.
Those were our options.
Well, you got to go to Danielle.
I know, but it's just funny to me that you were in the mood for either of those things. Those were the choices.
By the way, that was my point.
You really don't care about ambiance, do you?
Josh, that was my point.
What?
The fact of the matter is that the food takes a second place to that ambiance, and the economics is what closes restaurants.
I believe, though, that a true gastronome should be utterly indifferent to his physical surroundings.
I'll tell you what. I agree with you, except I would add this condition, and that is that a restaurant has to be comfortable enough that you want to stay and that you want to come back. I think that where design does come in to play is when a restaurant is really, it's either too angular or too...
Or so cold.
Too harsh or too cold.
Like, who wants to go to Morimoto?
And it's just uncomfortable.
I understand.
And as good as the food may be... And by the way, in some cases, you know, there's always exceptions. But I think most of the time, it doesn't... The design doesn't have to be immaculate. It doesn't have to be the Breslin, which is, a spectacularly designed restaurant. It just needs to be comfortable enough that you want to come back. And that often involves design in a big way.
Let's take a quick break.
Okay.
And then
Jerry.
And then we'll take up this subject, which
show,
I think is
Jerry.
It's key. Right. It's key. I'm Josh Ozersky, and this is the Mr. Cutlet Show.
Ball and chain. Listen to the whistle of the evening train. Know you about to wind up dead. Don't head back to Tennessee then. Rich man, step on my pole. Baby, won't you marry me?
Hi, I'm Josh Ozersky, a.k.a. Mr. Cutlets, and this is the Mr. Cutlets Show. This is, of course, the Heritage Radio Network here at Roberta's.
Where there's a fire.
There's a fire burning right in front of us.
What are they going to do with
it? People will come out. It's just so freewheeling.
Oh, it's not for cooking.
It's such a fantastic, warm, welcoming place.
Spectacular, like, especially in this weather.
The food is so good. The pizzas, the focaccias, the calzones. Then he makes his magnificent crostini, his pigfoot ragu.
It's such a like hole in the wall, and then you walk in and it's so...
It's everyone's
truly
dream
great.
Of a... You know what this has been? And this is something that really predates Grub Street and the Eater and the Feedbag and the rest of the... When you had a possession like this, and they kind of do because no one wants to come out here, to have this as your secret neighborhood possession is sort of like a grail in a certain...
An old guard neighborhood restaurant. And really just a spectacular treasure at that.
I mean, there's nothing like it. It's like if, right. like... And this is what it was like when Sambar first started, and it was like...
Yeah, that's exactly right,
that's exactly
actually.
Right?
Yeah. The Frankies have this to an extent.
The Frankies have it to an extent. But the Frankies aren't nearly on this level gastronomically, no. I don't think. Ben, you were saying...
It has to be...
Beautiful restaurants.
Good enough that you'll come back.
Comfort.
Comfort
is more important than design, per se.
Really?
And design, the changes or simple things that you could do in design is what makes it comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Not these overall concept things. It's the very simple things you do in design.
I think design is almost, for not a gastronome, I would say design is almost equally as important to me. And lighting.
Lighting is very
underrated. That's really one of Keith's great strengths, that he was a theatrical lighting director.
Those places are so well done.
And ultimately, that was the downfall of John Dory.
It was part of the downfall. Well, the John Dory is something I was going to bring up. It did. I was going to bring that up before. Let's say we were talking about covers and seats and so forth. How can a fine dining restaurant have 40 seats and succeed, even if... I mean, I guess that begs the question, how can you have a 12-seat fine dining restaurant succeed, which apparently is making a lot of money, but...
We're talking about Momofuku Ko.
Right, but that is some kind of weird thing where he can pay the cooks as servers or whatever.
Momofuku?
In fact...
Is that what you're talking about? That one, he started in the small space, and then he expanded to the bigger space, and the small space became a private restaurant or private,
something like that.
His prices and why he can survive.
Mm-mm.
What? No. Why?
Well, Jerry, I think it does a disservice to David's talent and his innovation too, and as a chef. Anyway,
I think with that empire, you know, Chang says, we haven't seen the books, but Chang says Ko to an extent loses money or breaks even. And the other restaurants service it. And what he really does is use it as a bait for chefs because they want to cook there.
Well, that makes sense.
It's a spectacular stage for chefs.
Well, that raises the question I was saying before. Setting aside questions of design versus gastronomy or whatever, like if a restaurant only has 40 seats like the John Dory did, how can they possibly make money? How many turns can they do? You're saying three turns. Like a serious meal is going to be like a couple of hours. And it's not... I mean, I guess big wines. Could big wines have done it? I mean,
yeah, who's taking a 6 o'clock reservation? Or the 11 o'clock?
I think on some level...
And there was no
bar. A 40-seat restaurant like John Dory is impossible. You cannot make money on it. And that's why it closed in the end. Because they were doing three turns and they weren't making money. Most of the big restaurateurs in the city say about 110 seats is the sort of sweet spot, and you're not making a ton of money on either side of that.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, I think it's sort of interesting that there's a bunch of restaurants, a cluster of three or four restaurants have just opened within a block or so of each other that would make an interesting test case, Stephanie. This is why I bring it up.
Okay.
Because we were asking Ben, like, which restaurant and what neighborhood.
So this will be our...
Yeah, this will be
let's
a little,
see how they do in a year.
Right.
Look back.
And Jerry, I'd be interested in your input as someone who's actually in the business, you know. You have Abe and Arthur's, from the Lotus guys. You have...
From the
Tenjun guys.
Correct.
You have the Standard grill from Andre Bellage, the owner
of the
Standard.
With Dan Silverman in the kitchen.
Dan Silverman in the kitchen.
Nice guy.
Nice guy. Ming the Merciless lookalike. very talented former chef from Leverhouse and, of course, Allison on Dominic. You have Bill's Bar and Burger, which is the Steve Hansen entry among the new restaurants. And across the street from that is the Tanuki Tavern, which is the Chatterow family entry. Now, what do these four restaurants tell us about where things are at now, at least from a business point of view?
Well, I mean, you know, in the meatpacking district, at least, I think what we're seeing is that you need a lot of money to open a restaurant. All four of these projects are extremely well-funded. They can lose money for 18, 24 months and even probably beyond that. And if they wanted to operate, they could because their pockets are very deep. And I think we're also seeing in all four of these restaurants that we're in a period of very easy food. None of these restaurants do in any way are trying to challenge diners to try new things or to experiment new tastes. They're all very much, we can talk about Tanuki as perhaps the exception, but they're all very much down the middle American restaurants.
Well, Tanuki is more than any of them. I mean, Tanuki is the Japanese version of China Grill. Everything is delicious and has tons of meat.
Tanuki, and we were there together and we enjoyed it. Tanuki is dumbed down.
Yeah,
Japanese
it's not in any way risky.
Well, I don't think it's dumbed down. I think that it's
an American palate.
It's for an American palate. I mean, I went to Sushi Zen, which the true Japanese gastronomes all consider to be the final word in really authentic Japanese food. And Suzuki-san made me a soup that was like so. I mean, like, oh, they were like, wow, this soup, it's the essence of the most sacred tradition, blah, blah, blah. Like, you could have read a book through it. It was so thin, you know? Like, the Chatterows load you up with...
Your palate is not...
Well, my palate may be
finer.
Crude and clouded, but it's responsive, and I understand it well.
You know, Josh, your palate, it's like when, a rock star slowly loses his hearing over the course of many years. Your palate is... I think it's a little desensitized.
I don't think your palate's
good.
It was
never sensitive, but... It was never.
You know, you have to shout it at Slash. Not, you know, if you try and have a conversation with Slash.
Don't say this. He's very sensitive.
You have a conversation with Slash, you got to shout at him. So I think to an extent. And by the way, Slash is an extremely talented musician, right? In the same way, I think sometimes you got to shout a little bit.
I just
bit
don't
at
think
you
you've ever had
for,
a.
For it to move the needle.
You've
with
never.
Mr. Cutlass.
You never had a super refined palate. You know that.
I think you're both wrong in this sense.
Could I?
Well, no, Jerry, I'd like to defend myself.
Okay.
I would like to defend you, but it's okay. It's indefendable. Go ahead.
I don't have an unrefined palate.
Okay.
In the sense
I'm
of
not
having,
saying, by the way, that it's not refined.
I said that.
Allow me to just get this.
I
don't have an unrefined palate in the sense that it's clouded, corrupted, or coarsened by misuse or decay. I will say, however... that the things that I like don't necessarily correspond to the most exquisite sensations on the palate.
Well, but you're
I
not
like
big.
I like things that feel good in my kishkas, and my kishkas
that's
more
exactly
than my upper
right.
palate is the
kishkas
sensory
is like
organ in me.
Brisket and but mashed potatoes.
What has been said is that food is becoming simpler now. I think the economy has something to do with that. I think that people are eating much more hearty, simple foods. And maybe that's the reason these restaurants went with those type menus.
But I think that the highest art of cooking, and I think that this is true, if you read historical gastronomy going back to, Carême and Escoffier and Apicius and all the way up through Prosper Montagne and Larousse Gastronomique, whatever, that the preparation of simple foods at the highest level has always defined great cooking and great gastronomy. So like a perfect roast chicken, a perfect egg, or whatever. And when we come back, we have another segment, right, Jack? This is it? Because the perfect example, I just want to say before we go
off. To be continued.
To be continued. The perfect example is the mushrooms here. Come here and eat the Hen of the Woods mushrooms a simple food in a cheap space, casual atmosphere. But those mushrooms, great amount of art goes into them that's totally transparent and elevates them to destination status.
The essence of Jean George's cooking.
Yeah, well, all great cooking. The Ripper, too. Anyway, I'm Josh Ozersky. This is the Mr. Cutlet Show, and we'll see you next week.
Mr. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you swing around that pork chop, I get a whiff of heaven every time you pass my doorstop. With the chicken and the brisket and the marrow and the giblets, Mr. Cutlets, spend some time with me. I know it's crazy, but it's true. It's not worth eating if it lacks the grease. Cutlets, Mr. Cutlets, when you burst into the kitchen, you grab a fist of meatballs and a bone fruition with the bacon and the lamb chops. And the-